Velkommen til Hestedyrlægerne, en podcastserie fra Boehringer Ingelheim. I disse podcast taler vi med specialister inden for forskellige fagområder vedrørende hestens sygdomme. Alle har det til fælles, at de deler din og vores passion for heste. Hej og velkommen til Hestedyrlægerne, podcast til dig, der er dyrlæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Jeg hedder Gorm. I andet afsnit med Tamsin Furtado fra Liverpool University fortæller hun om sin forskning i hesteejernes og dyrlægernes holdninger til fedme hos heste. Og hvordan man bedst muligt taler med hesteejere om det lidt følsomme emne.
We are back with Tamsin Furtado on the talk of owner compliance and how to make it easier for owners to change their behaviors and follow our advice. In this episode, we're going to talk about obesity in horses. And I know that you have been doing some research, particularly in this area, a PhD about the human side of obesity in horses. So why don't you start by telling us what you studied and what you found?
Yeah, absolutely. I can talk about this forever. So tell me if I get boring. This is my favorite topic. So my PhD was really about, so we've got all this great veterinary research about how to put a horse on a diet effectively. And we know exactly how to do that, what safe weight loss is, you know, safe ways we can do that, practical ways we can do that. But in the real world, it is just so hard to work with people and get them to monitor their horse's weight and change their horse's weight. So what can we do about it? So I was really looking at many interviews, discussion forums, and some observations to work out why it is that we've got these problems from a kind of human behaviour perspective. And so that was really interesting few years of my life. And I think I'm so curious to hear, Maria, about the situation in the Nordic countries and how different it is in comparison to our situation here. But in the UK, one of the main findings that we came up with really was that we have what we'd call an obesogenic environment for horses. So obesogenic environments is an idea that came from human health, and that would be an environment where it's kind of structured in such a way that it's actually quite hard to simply maintain weight or lose weight, because like, so in human world, this would be things like how prevalent fast food is and how cheap it is. We've got so much ultra processed food. It's actually quite hard to keep your calorie allowance at a level where, you know, that's sort of equivalent with your expenditure of energy. So also things like loss of green spaces for exercising in, you know, things like it's unsafe for kids to walk to school, so they, you know, drive it, you know, so we get less and less exercise and we're eating more and more. And we found that actually, essentially, you know, the UK for sure is like exactly what you would build if you were trying to make ponies fat. So we've got these lots of the places we keep horses are on diversified dairy farms. So they're grass that has been grown specifically for lactating dairy cows. But a lot of those yards find it really very difficult to put in place specific management for horses that are overweight, because the horses are managed as a herd. We've got milder winters, so the horses don't lose weight over the winter anymore. We've got really poor hacking now. So riding outside an arena is often, people think it's too dangerous and they don't want to do it. So people are exercising less and less. And then we've got this whole commercial environment around rugging, feeding, where people want to, you know, spend their money pampering their horses. You know, we've got a feed industry that, you know, often makes people feel a bit guilty if they're not feeding the latest thing, feeding lots of things. And so all of that kind of comes together and makes it, you know, makes it very difficult for horse owners to manage weight. But on top of that, we have these really awesome native ponies who are literally still so native, you know, just like your lovely, you know, Norwegian fjord ponies or Icelandic ponies or, you know, these guys, like literally they can go and live in the wild in a really sparse environment and they will absolutely thrive. And, you know, we're the same with our Shetland ponies, fell ponies, you know, they literally are still wild and yet we're keeping them in a environment that's completely inappropriate for them, really. I actually think it's not unlike keeping a reptile in an environment that's cold. Like it's we're literally taking them we're putting them in an environment that's completely inappropriate for them. And so then when we do want to marry to manage weight, what do we do? But we restrict them even more and even more, and they get more and more obsessed with food. And you know, there's such an uncomfortable relationship with food, with the owner, and the horse there. And it's not fun for people. So everybody hates managing it. The horses get miserable. The owners don't want to do it. And we end up with this really miserable situation for everyone. So the kind of outcome for that, really is that we need to be designing better environments for our native ponies if we're going to keep them in these. If we're not going to exercise them enough to manage their weight, then we need to create kind of enriched environments where they're, you know, there's lots for them to do that doesn't just involve eating. You know, they've got plenty of freedom of choice, friends, space to move around in, but just without these grassy, excessively grassy environments. So there's a lot on redesigning environments, I think that's come out of that. If that makes sense.
Did you look at that also specifically in your study, how people are doing with that or the attitudes towards it? Or
Yes, because what we were finding is that most of the things people were doing to manage weight were making them or the horse miserable. So grazing muzzles, putting a horse in a stable all day, you know, lunging is so boring, all of these things. So the most successful ways people were managing weight were to be really creative. So that was things like using track systems. Is that a thing in the Nordic countries already? So
it exists at least.
Well, I'll do a quick description just for anyone listening who's not familiar. So a track system is where instead of putting the horse in a paddock, you create a track around the outside of the paddock, and then ideally you'd have no or little grass in that, and sometimes people will have like four paddocks and they'll all link together, and you put the resources at different places. So there'll be an area where the horses chill out together that's maybe got like a sand area where they can lie down. You'd have maybe soaked hay around the track. You might have like playing areas. You might have water that's quite far, so they have to walk to it. So you're changing the environment so that the horses move more and eat less, essentially. And you're also fulfilling their needs because they're living with their friends. They've got freedom of choice. They've got stuff to do, and they're kind of feeling enriched. And so that was one example. Other examples were things like people using woodland areas to keep horses in because there's so little grass in them, but you can create really nice enriched environments where they can kind of nibble at trees. There's lots of bushes, you can hang hay nets off trees, you can put lots of toys up, you know, there's lots for the horses to do, and it's not just a boring square field. But and so the horses are kind of enriched, but without having to just restrict them. So then the horses are happier, the people are happier, and the weight comes off because there's less food around. So you've got kind of a win-win there a bit more, really.
It's interesting, really, because, I mean, obesity can be such a sensitive topic as well. Did you look at all at how to sort of approach the problem? We touched a little bit upon it in the previous episode with your example, but how to sort of approach the topic to an owner if they seem completely unaware, or because it can be, especially if the owner is also a little bit overweight, it could be really sensitive, you know. So how to sort of approach that?
Yeah, 100%. I recently found one of my transcripts from one of my earliest interviews where the owner had asked me if the horse was overweight, and I felt so awkward. And it's such a, I now use it as an example of what not to do, because, and I'm so glad I've got it recorded, because literally I faffed around and I made a little joke where I was like, oh, her ribs are in there somewhere. You know, like I was prodding the horse. Mm. And what I was trying to say was there's a lot of fat before I can feel the ribs. This horse was like really obese. But the owner had already told me so much about what she was doing to manage weight. I felt guilty. Mm. And I didn't know how, I just didn't know. And so we've studied lots of different ways of having these conversations and also used what we know from human and dog. There's a lot of dog obesity research as well. And the best tip I can give you is to instead of putting the pressure on yourself to like work out how to say your horse is fat, is to ask the owner, what do you think of the horse's weight? Because if you ask them, they basically tell you what information they need. And they also tell you what language they're comfortable with using. So if they say chunky monkey or they say morbidly obese, you know, you can use the words that they say because they're comfortable with them. So and also the other thing is that they're doing there is that they're telling you how ready to change they are and what information they need. So obviously you're going to give an owner a completely different set of information. If they say, oh, I think he's fine, isn't he? You know, that owner has no awareness. So you need to work on the awareness stage of behavior change. But and then you can talk about condition and why you might have a different idea of the condition of the horse. But if the owner says, oh my gosh, yeah, it's a nightmare, I'm already working on it, blah, blah, that owner obviously, very obviously requires a different set of information. So asking the owner will save you time by allowing you to know where to put your effort. But if you go in, which, you know, is certainly what I would have done in the early days, you know, either make jokes about it. I would say things like, oh, he's been, oh, he looks like he's in show condition, or, oh yeah, really been on the grass, either making jokes about it or going and saying his body condition is higher than I would like. You don't know where the owner is. So that information, it might be completely useless to them, and they don't need that at the moment. They need help on how to manage. So, asking them is the most useful thing because it will kind of save you time, and they will also tell you what they're comfortable with talking about. And on that, I would also ask them nowadays, I would also ask them and say, would you, if they say, oh, let's say it's that first owner who says, oh, he's fine, isn't he? I think he's just a chunky build. That owner, I would probably now say, I would ask them a bit about why they think that, but I would then probably say to them, that's really interesting because there are some areas of where I feel like he's carrying too much weight. Are you happy to talk or would you like to talk about that a bit more? And then kind of invite them into the conversation, because then again, they're empowered into being part of it. Most owners will say yes at that point. Very few will say no. And to be honest, if they do say no, then you'd be wasting your breath anyway if you're telling them something they don't want to hear. So that process of asking is so powerful. It just feels like it's going to take longer. It's a bit scary to get used to. So
But it's such a useful tip, I think. It's really, because it will change the whole sort of way on, as you say, you get all the information you need, and you know how to continue in a brilliant way. I think it's a great tip, actually.
Thanks. I'm curious on when I was saying before about the obesogenic environment in the UK. I'm curious on how you feel the Nordic countries are similar or different to what I was saying. Were many of the same issues present, would you say? Lack of hacking and that sort of thing?
I would say it's probably different depending on the area I mean, our countries are very different, and it's a huge difference to own a horse in the north of Sweden, where you have really cold winters and lots of area, and to have it in Denmark, which is a smaller country, mild winters, maybe a little bit more similar to Britain in at least weather condition wise. But lots of the things that you tell us about the situation in the UK also apply here, of course. And especially I really do recognize that one, you feel bad if you don't give your horse something in the bucket, you know. It's and to only have this really poor forage or poor pasture, it makes you feel bad because somehow it feels like instinctively you want to sort of feed.
Yeah.
Like And that's how you take care of someone. You give them proper food. It's the same with children and grandmas, you know, who are like, eat more, have a cookie.
Yeah.
So it's feels like it's a very human thing, you know, that we just want to make sure that they're comfortable and that they are happy, sort of. And also with the things that we do know about horses, that they actually do need to chew and they do need their feeding time and so on. I'm not really sure about the prevalence of obesity, because I don't think that there has been that large studies in the Nordic countries to look at the population here and to look at what the actual prevalence is. It's very difficult also, as you say, to go around and measure every horse and so on. But it's a very common issue. And I mean, EMS is a very common problem here as well. So of course it's prevalent. We just don't maybe know how prevalent exactly. So when it comes to these native breeds, I mean, as you say, we have the same problems. They're sort of created for an environment where they would actively have to search for food, and now they're in an environment where we just hand it to them without the extra work. So we do have a lot of similar problems, I think. And this is my own sort of idea or thoughts around it, that the discussion that has been about horses' feeding time and chewing time, that it has been, sometimes it's been translated to that horses need to eat constantly.
Yes.
They need to have their head in a bale of hay all the time, 24/7.
Yes.
And it's so difficult to sort of tackle that, because the intention is so good. You want to do something that's good for the horse, and you learn that that they need their chewing time, and you see all these, how you were keeping horses previously in the old times when they were given lots of bucket feed and almost no hay, and you want to be the sort of modern horse owner who does the best for their horses, but then it can become sort of counterproductive.
Yes.
And they become obese instead. I think, or I get the sense that this is an issue, that owners think that they're doing something really good for the horse. And it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to tackle. If you have a hay, you have the hay you have. You can't change it. Especially after the 2018 draft, when it was so difficult. We had so little forage in this country and in these countries, and it was so difficult to find forage. And you would just have to take anything that you could get. And if that meant you would have to take a lot of sugar and, you know, a lot of energy to your Shetland ponies, that it was that or nothing. So it's these situations as well, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we have the exact same thing where the message about ulcers has got through so strongly, which is fantastic. You know, that's absolutely brilliant. And we've got really successful human behaviour change there. But what's so interesting is I think that the behaviour change there has been so successful because it's a really salient message. It's such a nice message. Provide more food. Like, that totally aligns with what we all want to do. I'm also a feeder. I love feeding. You know, that's how I show love to my dog, my family, to the horses. But that, like, being a feeder doesn't have to mean that the animal or the people or whatever are become overweight. Like, we can do that in a healthy way. It's just that you know, we're in this situation where dogs and horses and people exercise so little, and what we're feeding is often so kind of out of is too much. And as you say, I think we see a lot that people feel like they need to have, so that being a trickle feeder means that they need literally a big bale of hay in front of them, rather than obviously actually being a trickle feeder would be like picking at something a little bit and then picking at something a few minutes later. You know, it's picking rather than it being like big mouthfuls. So I mean, we often use the messaging around naturalness there. Think about what, because that's often very salient to people, and, you know, they want to do it things naturally often. And that, you know, through creating environments, whether it's using those small hold nets or those feeding toys that are like balls or hiding food in lots of different places, that's really natural because the horse is then having to kind of search for them and engage in getting small amounts of food at once. But I totally agree. I think it's such a good case. It's such a good example of where one message has got through, like, great, we're some way towards solving one health problem, but now we just have another health problem. So it's interesting, isn't it? People are so interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And as I said, difficult to sort of solve. Since many of these breeds are so, they're so prone to put on this weight. We were previously also just talking a little bit about the show ponies, because I know that you in the UK you have this is that's like a whole whole situation right there where show ponies are sort of rewarded for being overweight. Mm-hmm. How is that situation?
Interesting question. Yeah, so we've got this problem which has come from tradition, basically. So here in the UK, I don't know if it's the same, but in the UK, the showing would have been like horses that, you know, they work through the winter, maybe hunters, for example. And then in the summer, when they're, you know, they're having their time off and you take them to a show to see whether they're appropriate quality to, you know, to show them off, to show off your horse, but also kind of maybe for breeding or whatever. So traditionally, the shows happen over the summer when the horses are at their biggest. And it's to kind of see if they're appropriate for breeding. So, but over time, that idea of them being overweight because it's the summer seems to have somehow got a bit too ingrained. And overweight has been equated with beauty, I guess, which is really interesting. Mm. I think particularly because horses put on weight in areas where we like muscle. So like on a crest, people like to see a crest. And if you're not used to differentiating the crest being muscle or fat, then you just see a crest. So you're happy. And that's fine. So yeah, that's been traditionally a really big problem. So we've had some initiatives in the past 5 years. I would say before that, the showing organisations have themselves been putting things in place as well. But we started an initiative about 5 years ago now that had someone in the ring condition scoring every horse and then rewarding a big shiny rosette, because we know rosettes are very motivational to horse owners. So a big shiny gold rosette to the horse with the healthiest body condition, just to get people thinking a bit differently about weight. And that's been it's quite simple, but that's been so successful for building a positive association with talking about this. So it's not us going in and being like, you know, you need to eliminate all these people, or being like, you know, the fat police, which we have been called. It's not that at all. It's being really positive. And then as a result of building those positive connections, we're working a lot with the showing organizations to provide training to judges, to help competitors think about weight management and so on. So that's been really positive, and we are seeing change overall in the prevalence of obesity in the show ring. So, for example, the average crests are reducing year on year, which is great. But obviously change is slow, as always. But it is happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's been a really nice thing to do, actually, because it's been really positive and we've talked to lots of people. I just sometimes feel I might go blind when I come home from a show and I've had to condition score like 150 bay horses. Like, you know, you feel like, oh, my God, I can never look at another horse.
but it sounds like a great initiative.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
So as veterinarians or veterinary professionals, what are the things that that we can do differently, or that can be done differently from our side of this when it comes to advising owners or talking to owners about this?
Well, I think one of the things that I was really surprised by when I did some research with vets and vet nurses here is how everyone was so frustrated with this problem of overweight horses, and with having to have the conversation over and over again, and sometimes having to put to sleep horses where the vet felt that was entirely preventable. But everybody was so frustrated with it, but no one was kind of talking about what they were doing. It was just like everybody kind of saw it as like a fact of life that you were going to have that massive frustration, which I think is actually really sad to think about in terms of kind of mental health and well-being of vets. Like, that's a really hard thing to have constantly. But vets weren't talking to each other about successful, you know, what they'd done well or what they'd done badly, or, you know, the example I gave you of my really bad conversation about weight. So actually, when we did some research which involved working groups, just where we got people to talk about their experiences. And by the end, they were all like, oh, that was so helpful just to hear how you had that conversation. And I hadn't thought of doing this before, or, oh, that's so great, you got through with that owner. So I think one of the best things we can do is just talk to each other a bit more about it, about dealing with the frustration, dealing with the guilt, or dealing with the difficult feelings when you have to, as you said, maybe have the conversation with an owner who's overweight themselves, maybe, you know, the more we talk about that, the better, and the more we'll help each other with different strategies that have worked for one another. And the other thing is, like, we can also allow owners to come up. I think it's fine to say to owners, so, you know, this horse, we do need to work on the horse's weight, and I'm happy to help you with that from a veterinary perspective. It's up to you to work out what works for your pony. So I can give you some ideas, and I can leave you with, like, we've got a free leaflet that's got like 40 different things they can change, right from, you know, really obvious things like lunging more to the less obvious things like riding one horse and leading another, or I don't know, maybe turning the horse out with youngsters so that they play more, you know, all sorts of ideas, so that they can work out what's going to be most practical in their situation and keep the horse happy. So yeah, I think those two things, really, talk about it more with each other, and then you know, talk to owners about being kind of creative, keeping their horse happy during weight management, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, it can be really frustrating, and it's also because when you yourself are aware of all the risks that are connected to it, and you seem to find that the owners don't seem to be as aware, or they haven't. You have all this experience as a vet, right? You met so many laminitic ponies, and then when someone doesn't seem to realize the risk, it can be really, really frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think the most important message here is that it's not necessarily a lack of knowledge with the owner, but more difficulty of changing, and that you want your horse to be happy, sort of.
Exactly. Well, I found that every single owner, they knew full well, they had the knowledge, like fat equals laminitis. They knew that for sure. They just, weren't always sure how fat their horse actually was, because they found it quite hard to separate, especially with the native type, separate fat from like the shape the horse was meant to be. And B, the idea of putting weight management strategies in place was so unattractive to owners that they didn't really want to do it. So then it's really easy to tell yourself, oh, it'll be okay. Or I'll do it next week. I also do that myself every spring with our pony. He starts putting weight on. At what point, you know, you're busy every week. So at what point do you like really go, do you know what? I've got to do something here. The more fun or interesting or attractive to owners that weight management is, the better. So, you know, and it can be anything, like whatever they like doing. So like I take the pony running sometimes with me, for example, because he loves that. And that's much nicer than having to put a grazing muzzle on him when I will feel really guilty. But a grazing muzzle might be the perfect answer for another person. So it's kind of finding what's, you know, what's suitable in their environment, I guess.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Tamsin, for this talk on obesity, and we'll talk to you soon again in the next episode.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Tak fordi du lyttede til Hestedyrlærerne. Hvis du kan lide, hvad du hører, så glem ikke at trykke på abonner på din podcast-app, så går du ikke glip af nogen episoder. Du må også godt fortælle os, hvad du synes ved at skrive en anmeldelse. Vi modtager også meget gerne tips om kommende gæster og emner, og vores kontaktoplysninger kan du finde i podcastbeskrivelsen. Vi høres ved snart.